Hello, and welcome to Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. Greetings from the train. I'm headed from Helsinki to the far east of Finland, almost to the Russian border. In today's episode, I move around a little bit, literally and figuratively. I've got some clips of lovely conversations that I've had with folks, and I've got some ponderings, and I'll start with a little discussion of what's been going on, the best I can pull it together. Enjoy. I've been traveling a bit since the last episode of Peter's podcast. I got to visit a town in western Finland where Wendy and I led workshops in the studio of a former student. We spent some time in the Swedish countryside and in Stockholm visiting friends and hanging out with Ulrich and Norbury, who is Wendy's and my partner in our upcoming retreat in France. And we're carrying on with Aino Siren, Mikaela Solden, and Megan Fliegelman in a teacher training in Helsinki with a delightful group of students. Throughout this time, I've been pondering ways to relate to the stresses in our lives and to the pursuit of our highest callings. I've been doing some reading, some listening to podcasts, some staring off ships into the islands of Scandinavian archipelagos, and meditating. And I've had conversations with the wise yogis who are around me, whether in person, on FaceTime, or in e-communications. I took the action of turning off the news, personal social media, and news outlets and political podcasts for 5 days, even avoiding news of the Helsinki summit. If I had to say one thing about what's emerged from this time, it's an emphasis on perspective. We get very fixed in our perspective the longer we sit in it. The more you listen to the same thing, the more tunnel vision. The more you do the same routine, the more it seems like the only way. The more you tell yourself the same stories about yourself, the more you believe them. Changing perspective doesn't necessarily make everything better. In fact, in teacher training yesterday, a student said, "What if you don't feel anything when you practice? What if you don't have some deeper experience?" I was reminded of Alan Finger's description of daily practice as being like taking a shower. You do it to reset, to establish a baseline where you stay connected to your innate, broader perspective. The alternative to doing that practice, which a student pointed out, was that without doing it, she'd be crazy. So even without seeing a kaleidoscopic light show or feeling sensational, that's a pretty good benefit, not being crazy. Wendy and I are missing people and pets back home, but we're gaining perspective on ourselves and hearing the perspectives of people here on everything from yoga to culture to socialized medicine. I've also been hearing a lot of good advice about the power of love. As a motivator, as a healer, as the bond that joins across time and space. Not so much love you get, love as a noun, but the love you do, you loving and following what you love. Here's the essence of that. Do what you love. Follow your bliss. These are good pieces of advice when paired with the right perspective, a perspective that lets you see the deep love, the passion that defines you, versus the likes and dislikes that satisfy our ego or distract us from doing things to serve our passion. Following your passions, doing what you love, might be your business, or it might be a hobby, or somewhere in between. It could even be the way you make every decision in your day. One example of this kind of thinking is coming from one of the presidential candidates for 2020, Andrew Yang. He is advocating a universal basic income, an idea I played with and actually thought I invented about 20 years ago. UBI, as it's called, would pay everyone in the country about $1,000 each month. People doing fine are included, so there's no hard feelings about giving lazy, quote-unquote, people welfare. But people who are trying to transition careers or relocate to places where there are jobs or single mothers trying to manage would have a chance. One of the benefits of having this kind of regular support is that you have a little more choice around what to do, a little less desperation about taking anything to be sure you have something. It also allows risk-taking, like trying out a business idea. Yang's campaign motto is humanity first, to distinguish it from our corporate-focused form of capitalism. And I'm not trying to make an endorsement here, but the whole idea is an example, looking at our world from a different perspective. New perspective is revolutionary, potentially, but it's at least a way to get some space around your emotions and your patterns and to imagine doing something differently. And in case Yang doesn't get elected president, we can still look for ways to build new perspective into our lives and to choose according to our bliss. Not sure what your bliss is? Meditate on it. Or perhaps more accurately, meditate on nothing and allow your notion of bliss to emerge. Do nothing, do whatever you like, wander, give it time. Ulrika was just saying the other day that there's a Swedish word that means walking around without a purpose, just taking things in. Do that. Right now, I'm writing in the park across from our Helsinki apartment, listening to accordion jazz up the hill, and watching people bring their dogs into a dog park devoted especially to guide dogs. Imagine the wide open perspective that lets someone notice that visually impaired people could use their own dog park. In Helsinki, the passion is equality and humanity. A dog park for the blind is an outcome of that kind of perspective, and other results show all over the city. Each of us lives in our own world and is part of concentric larger worlds. Pause. Take a step back. Look from higher up. See what makes sense. See yourself and your role. And then adjust your role to align with what you love. No one has to agree with you or validate you. The news will probably tell you to focus on something else. You may have to take care of some business or go help someone out. But then focus on doing what you love and see from that perspective. I recorded some sessions about loving in relationship, about the challenge, about the difficulty in finding love when you're upset. They're little 1 minute or 2 minute or 3 minute clips that I was recording while I was down by the waterfront. They're perhaps a lesson in self-study or an example of self-study, how you can take a moment and try to figure out what's going on, try to give yourself the perspective to see things in a different light. That's what's going on right now, and here's what was going on in these few clips. Enjoy. What does it look like to choose love? It looks hard. There's somebody who's upsetting you. There's something that just happened. There's some challenge. And you have to look at the challenge, and to choose love is to be not the beloved or the lover, not the one who gets, not the one who gives, but start by being the thing that is between, the pervading thing, the thing that goes between, is the Shiva and the Shakti, to use the tantric words, to be the consciousness and to be the energy of it. That you're in it, and you're aware, and you find the wholeness. And in that wholeness, you recognize that this other person or whatever it is that got you upset is of this same stuff. When my friend says something that offends me, it's like a mirror. It's like you don't see it in them, you don't see it in you, and yet you're just bouncing the same thing off back and forth. You're getting offended because they did something to you, but they did that something to you because they got offended. And this is like a common play, like there's so many plots, right, in literature. It's like a common play in our lives, in our relationships, that we run into the person does it to us, we reflect it back, then you're in this like loop or this hall of mirrors thing where it goes infinitely on, and all you do to get out of that hall of mirrors is you step to one side of that mirror. But the stepping to one side requires a pause. This is where this practice thing is so key. When you practice, you make space from your normal way, your normal mind, your normal emotions, your normal even doing. And then there's the chance to see the thing anew, to see what's going on, to realize from that different angle that you're looking back at the mirror that, oh my God, there's a mirror there. And so you are reflecting yourself. And in this, in the tantric way, that's simply literal, right? Everything is the same stuff. So you are looking at yourself. There's this beautiful image of Shiva looking at Shakti, you know, at the created, being admired by the creator. This can sound arrogant, except if you've ever made a piece of art yourself, or you've ever baked a dinner that you're really proud of, it's literally the doing of something, the creating of something gives such great joy. So we have this thing where we are like what we are interacting with. And if we step aside and see that, then we can say, ah, I did this. This created that. Then when it came back at me, I was upset about it. So how do I relate to this differently? How do I accept the responsibility for my part in it? And sometimes it's literal. Sometimes it's saying, I'm sorry, which is an incredibly hard thing for us to say because we don't want to give up. We want to be the loved. But the whole goal is to figure out not to be the loved, not to be the lover. How can I be the love? To deal with Trump as love, you have to go and give Trump the quality of being the same stuff, the child of God, if you want to use that language, or Trump is just another person like me. And once you start to say that, you go, why would I act that way? What would have happened to me? What choice might I have made? What hurt might I have received? What gifts might I have that I try to take advantage of? What pain do I face that I turn from? And then when you start to look at him, in this case, in that light, he is no longer this other, because I'm now trying to feel what he feels. And that creates a shift. That creates love. Getting older, how can you possibly love that? Elizabeth Lesser said in an interview with Oprah that there was this ancient Roman notion of amor fati, to be in love with fate. Fate was teaching you something. And consistent across all of us is this fate of getting older, that we grow older with time. And to argue with that is to certainly be unhappy, because there is no alternative. You are doing this. So the only thing to do is to see, what is this for? How can I enjoy this? How can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? How have I grown from this? And to say, ah, that's it. To look back at children, see what they're learning. To look at teenagers and see what they're learning. To feel how awkward they are, how uncomfortable they are. To know that you've gone through that already. To get older, and as you get older, it's like the experience range blossoms out into a million possibilities. And you've had certain experiences and you haven't had other experiences. And each one of those is both the opportunity for interesting, or regret. And to look for the loving in that is to look for both, to appreciate that they both exist. And as I sit here looking out at the ocean with all this experience behind me, sure, it would be fun to have other experiences than what I'm having, but this is the experience I'm having. And accepting is too passive a word. There's an engaging with, to tackle where you are now with a gusto, you know, with this is what I have now, this is what I can do now. Takes you out of that moment of comparison of what you have now with those other things that maybe you had before, maybe you didn't have before. Maybe you wish you had before, maybe you wish you hadn't had before in the case of, you know, things that were traumatic in your life. But there are no doing over. One of the most powerful things I ever experienced was the statement, life is not a dress rehearsal. All the time that we think we're going along and we're figuring it out so that we can do it right sometime. There is no sometime. There's just this time. So embrace this time. Find the love of this time. Be in love with this time. And then there's only like a sentimental kind of love for the other times. Oh, wasn't that nice? Oh, that really sucked. But this time, what can I do with this moment, this potential for love, a loving moment, now? I have a retreat coming up with Wendy Newton, Ulrika Norbury, to Normandy, France. It's a great, great opportunity to spend some time on yourself in a deep way with what Wendy likes to call trusted others, people who can help you sort out what's important, what's not important, what's working, what you could use, otherwise known as really good teachers. So I hope you'll come. We tried to price it just right. It can be easily bundled with a vacation time in Paris or London or anywhere else in Europe. Take a look. PeterFurco.com/France2018. See you there. A bientôt. I spoke with Kati Vanyankulma, a student from last year who invited us to teach workshops at her studio in Seinäjoki on the western edge of Finland. Here's our little chat after the workshop. I'm here with Kati Vanian Kulma.
Hi,
at
Peter.
Her studio. Namaste, Kati.
Namaste.
Yeah. So we had the fun of having teacher training together last year.
Yeah, there in Helsinki, Lauttasaari.
Yeah, which was a big deal for you because it's 3 hours between here and there on the train.
Yeah,
but you drove,
I,
right?
I stayed there in the hotel
those
3 weeks,
right.
And then I came back to the weeks and come back for the weekends. What
right.
we have after those full weeks, so
yeah, because we had an intensive teacher training.
Yeah,
so the whole 200
yeah,
hours
a lot
of
work
training.
With that.
Right, and this weekend, Kati invited me to the new studio that she has, along with Wendy, to come and do workshop. And so we're going to talk a little bit about her studio and a little bit about how teacher training turned into having a studio.
Yes.
Yeah, it's exciting. So there are other yoga studios in this city, Senayoki?
No, we have gyms, and they
gyms.
Have yoga, but
right.
It's not like real yoga.
Right.
It's like the gym thing.
So had you done much yoga before you started teacher training?
Yes, I lived there in Miami, like 15 years ago,
uh-huh.
a while, and I started yoga there.
Ah.
But when
American
I come back,
yoga.
Yes. And but when I come back to Finland, and we didn't have studios here, so
right.
I did that like once in a while. I took the, I went somewhere else and
mm-hmm.
after
mm-hmm.
those lessons. So.
And so, how did you get interested in studying in a teacher training?
I don't know. First, I was thinking that it's just for me. I want to learn more,
right.
and that is a good way to go and discover the yoga thing like more deeply.
Right.
But
because you had this interest from when you had been doing it all along. Anyway.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That was like me too.
Yeah.
It was always helpful for me.
Yeah. But then after teacher training, I was like missing the place where to go and do the yoga, because it's not the same if you are doing that at home all the time.
Right.
So.
Right. And you get spoiled doing it.
Yes.
At Ishta, right?
Yeah. 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 And then I start to, I knew that there is like few teachers here in Seinäjoki who teach yoga. So
mm-hmm.
I contact them mm-hmm. and ask, so if you like to start this thing with me.
Mm-hmm.
And first, I think everybody was like, maybe, and you know, it's gonna be a lot of work. And
mm-hmm.
but then I get like 5 persons to
mm-hmm.
do this thing.
And you did it in a very professional way. I mean, it's not like a club, like a bunch of friends make a space or something. This is like a serious
yeah.
operation.
Yeah. And we did like a lot of work for
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
And we
yeah.
Trying to have the real yoga thing here,
mm-hmm.
not the gym thing, like the real yoga, different teachers and
yeah.
That everybody has like place to do their own thing here.
Mm-hmm. So you have a variety of different kinds of yoga. You
yes.
teach a couple of different things yourself.
Yes.
What are you teaching?
It's like, I think it's like Ista flow.
Mm-hmm.
I can't use the Ista name yet because it was like only that 200 hour
right.
training, but it's the same kind
yeah.
that the Ista flow. And the other one was that, how did you pronounce that?
Prenatal.
Prenatal yoga.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the other one.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. And when you were taking your training, you had just recently had a baby.
Yeah, it
was
like, yeah, it was 4 months old when
okay.
I got the teacher
and
training.
Had you been doing yoga prenatal before when you were
yeah,
carrying your baby?
Yeah, yeah, I had done that like with my every 3 children, so
mm.
it's like I know the
how you know that
yeah
practice.
Yeah
that's so great
yeah, yeah, and I think it's so good for the woman who are pregnant
yeah
so.
Yeah, I think I was telling you, I just interviewed the woman who runs the teacher training for prenatal
yes.
in New York. And,
yeah,
and it
it's so nice,
but
because when you are pregnant, you don't maybe feel so good.
Right.
And it's like, it's can be really hard stuff you to handle.
Mm-hmm.
Even and when you are like first time pregnant, there is so much change there in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's yoga is like a really great way to handle everything there.
Right.
So
physical and emotional,
yes,
probably.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. And so you're teaching the Ishta flow and a prenatal, but you have some other kinds of yoga here too.
Yes.
What are they?
We have like Ashtanga,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, I don't know, we have like a lot of like, it's Hatha yoga.
Mm-hmm.
It's like...
And how is the Hatha different from the Ishta that you're teaching?
Actually, I don't really know. They have like one big place here in Finland where they teach them, and also almost every Hatha teacher come from there.
From that school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I never been there, so mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. And you have a yin yoga teacher, right?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, the Johanna who right. was here today.
Yeah, she mentioned that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And are the students enjoying all the different classes, or do you get like a certain set of students who only come to yin?
Obviously, prenatal. Yeah, at this point, we have like a lot of Ashtanga people here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's because this is so new thing here,
right.
and everybody has sometimes heard the Ashtanga.
Yeah.
So
right.
it's like easy to come. They know
right.
something about that.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and we, Wendy and I, in our workshops this weekend, spoke a lot about the Ashtanga in its original way, that it's the eight limbs
yes,
of a whole
and,
yoga practice.
I was thinking about that because I think there is like many people who don't know that.
Right.
They think that the Ashtanga is only that lineage.
Right.
Yeah, so
right.
they don't know about the eight limbs
yeah.
at all.
So now that you had the two workshops here, it's a refresher for your own teacher training. You're now the voice of the real eight limbs
yeah.
here in
Senayoki.
Yeah. yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So you've been open for how long?
From April.
From April.
Yeah.
Great. And going forward, what are your plans? You were telling me you have some workshops coming and you're going to keep doing
yes.
classes.
We try to keep this going.
Mm-hmm.
For now, we have like 2 years.
Lease?
Yeah.
For the building?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And we have to decide, like, not this Christmas, but Christmas after that.
Mm-hmm.
Are we, you know, going forward?
Right.
And doing, are we still doing this? So
yeah.
hopefully
yeah.
it's going to be...
We brought some energy to this weekend.
Yeah.
Keep it coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at continuing on over the coming time, you think the same kinds of classes? Or are you looking to like see what people are enjoying and you make adjustments? Or how are you doing that part? How are you figuring out what works?
Maybe it's the what the people like.
Mm-hmm.
We have to offer that. But also I like to search new teachers, and I like by myself go to other teachers'
mm-hmm.
lessons. Every teacher can teach you something new.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and because it's so small town, it's quite hard to find the teachers.
Sure.
But I want to keep like doors open for
mm-hmm.
everybody, so
mm-hmm.
everybody can come here to, you know, do their own things.
Yeah. And what do you think the yoga offers Finnish people? Like everybody, I think every country is kind of different.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is it about yoga and Finland that
I
works.
Think Finland is quite a Western country these days,
mm-hmm.
and everybody is so busy, and you know, the same that they're in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So
fewer people, but just as busy.
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. So it maybe this is like a place, and yoga is the way to relax and be with yourself and find something new, but
mm-hmm.
you don't have it there in your life.
Right, right. to make a new space.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. And Wendy was talking today a little bit about how the whole practice opens up the space for you to then get inspired with what it is that you want to do, right?
Yeah.
To create the possibility to get new ideas and things like that.
To realize that there is something more that you can see at this point.
Right. And I think it's your studio here is such a perfect example of that, that you came to learn something more about yoga for yourself.
Yeah.
And you have another career, you have a profession, and yet when you came back here, you had this idea, let's make yoga happen here. It's really impressive. And I mean, that's within 1 year of your training.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
And it's a beautiful space.
Thank you.
Well, great. Do you think that you will at some point do more yoga training, that you'll take further training and
I think so. I think so. I like to take that 300 hour training.
Mm-hmm.
So have you, do you have any plans for about
that? We were talking about it. Before the way the training was organized, it took like 6 months to take it. But because there's so much interest internationally, we've been trying to figure out how to teach it in smaller chunks. So I think we're going to do 3 separate modules. And so you can take one and then another and then another
that
together.
That could be better for me also because I have that other work.
Right.
So not that
it's
much
hard
vacation.
To take that time. Yeah, exactly. And also the way that we are teaching in Ishta now, there's like a handful of teachers like me and Wendy who teach in those 300-hour trainings. Yeah. And we live in different places, so we can now have a module in Stockholm and one in Helsinki and one in New York and one in London. And so someone who wanted to take the training could go to any of those places to do the module that they're missing.
Yeah.
So hopefully it makes more opportunity.
Yeah.
So cool. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks
for talking to me about this, and thanks for having us here at your studio, which is called San Maya. Beautiful. How did you come up with the name?
It was like really hard to decide because we have like
five
partners.
So
it took a long time to decide.
But you did.
Yeah.
Peacefully.
Yeah.
Great. All right. Yeah. Thank you, Kati.
Thank you.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Keep Peter's Podcast in your ears. Go to patreon.com/Peter's Podcast. Thanks. I got to spend some quality time with Ulrika Norbury, her family, and her sister Lotta in the town of Eskilstuna, about 70 miles from Stockholm. Lotta is an Ishta yoga teacher and a massage therapist there. Lotta and I snuck in a little recorded conversation before Ulrika brought us back to Stockholm. I hope you enjoy it. Here we are in the Swedish countryside with Lotta Norbury talking yoga. How fun.
Super great.
Yeah. So good to see you. Every time I talk to you, yoga just pours out of your mouth. It's so perfectly integrated in your living.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And you've been studying yoga for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
How did that all come about?
Well, it actually started 1997.
Uh-huh.
Ulrika took me to a class and she said, let's go and do some yoga and like asana practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never done asana practice before, but I always been interested in yoga as a philosophy. So I went, and that was the worst thing I ever done.
Didn't like it.
I didn't like it because it was an intermediate class.
Oh, yeah.
And it was pretty tough. And I thought that I was strong and I did a lot of other physics, riding.
Right.
For example.
Riding horses.
Yes, yes. But after that, I sort of got more and more interested because I like challenging or challenge myself. So I started out in doing some by a book, actually by her first book, Power Yoga book. So I had it at home and I did it after my writing session or another physics session, sort of. And then she sort of took me to a Hatha Yoga, I think, down in Varberg. I think it was a Hatha Yoga 100 or 50 hours training. And I didn't really know that I was going to that. But
you thought she was taking you to a spa or something?
Well, sort of. Actually, I'm the kind of person I never ask questions. I just follow and see what I'm going to sort of, the situation's going to give to me, sort of.
Right.
Yeah. So I went there and I took that 100 or 50 hour Hatha Yoga and I got even more interested. And then she sort of kept on pulling me into this and then I went to Power Yoga 1, 2, and 3. So I took my 200 hour training.
Yeah.
And didn't really sort of wanted to be a teacher. Or actually, I never even asked myself, do you want to be a teacher? So I just started teaching and that's how I started.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And now the thing that seems to be most coming from you when I talk to you is that your interest in pranayama.
Yes.
Yeah. And and other aspects of yoga too.
Yes.
Yeah. Like what?
Well, everything interests me really, but there is certain things that sort of inspires me. So I go by my inspiration. So that's my inspiration leads me to deepen myself into certain aspects, and pranayama and breathing has always been the greatest for me because that's where I find my myself actually, and I find that room of space that I need in my body and in my system, and it's also a good way to do internal physics, I used to call it.
You were saying yesterday when we were walking around a historical castle that you find the pranayama interesting because it can help bring you in either direction, either inward or outward.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you say more about that?
Yes. yes. What we were talking about yesterday is that I can sometimes meet students that having the opposite, sort of an opposite direction to internal, external. Like some people live more internal than external. And sometimes you need to connect with the external world. And pranayama can help you to do either or.
Like pull someone out of their shell or out of being too maybe mental.
Yes, like they can have a mental disorder. Like it doesn't have to be like that you're feeling sick or anything, that you have to be like on medication or anything. Some of us people have more an internal world than external world. And pranayama, I think it's a good bridge to take them in or out.
Right.
Whatever you need.
Yeah, it's certainly easier than like finding a yoga mat and doing, you can just sit down and do it.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought that working with pranayama for such a long time, I also think that it sort of gives you a space for, well, certainly for those people that lives in the internal world, it gives them space to be curious about the external world. That's how they sort of tell me about it afterwards.
Yeah, because pranayama is such a bridge between the
it's
the energetic bridge between the physical and the rest.
Exactly.
That's cool. So they tell you about it after they're doing it.
Yes.
That's so cool.
It's usually when we do privates actually.
Of course. And you have experience in nursing as well, so you're able to easily tune in with people's physical challenges, etc.
Yes.
Do you still do that work or not so much?
Not so much right now. Like I go with the inspiration, so that's how I am. And and I actually took prescription with patients that had asthma. And I gave a class for the asthma doctors here in Eskilstuna and the nurses that works with asthma. And I gave them a class sort of building it up with pranayama in an aspect that a patient with pretty heavily asthma can take it and the purpose about it. So we did a little workshop about it, and then they wrote prescriptions for the patients so I could take them.
So it just, you know, obviously it's going to depend on who's in front of you, but just as a general advice for someone who's suffering with asthma, how do you begin?
Usually I begin with just talking about the breathing, and like usually asthmatic have sometimes problem with the exhale. So we're working a lot with Krama breath, which is excellent for asthmatic.
Breathing in steps.
Yes, breathing in steps.
Breathe in a little, pause, breathe in a little, pause, breathe in a little, and then reversing.
Yes, but we are not doing the pause. We just sort of, I usually work with mindfulness then, that you sort of pretending that you're walking out of the mountain, for example, and you just look at the view and then you go down, for example. They don't sort of feel that they, like, they don't feel that they have a limit. They sort of just make a roundness on the mountain, sort of.
Right.
So that works better.
And the visualization helps get it out of this realm of it feeling so internally focused.
Exactly. Nice. Exactly.
Cool.
Because be,
Well, great. Well, we snuck in this little talk just as we have to get out of this beautiful countryside and head back to Stockholm. Yes. But I'm so glad I got to talk to you.
Yeah, and quick one.
Yes.
Lovely to see you.
So good to visit.
Yeah.
All right.
Great.
Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Thanks for joining me on our meandering, wandering, looking around trip through Scandinavia in this episode of Peter's Podcast. Please support me on patreon.com, and we'll see you soon. Namaste.